Back on downtown at 4:42. Rich Kimble, Carrie Haskell here.
Where do I begin? Clean up this mess I made, where do I begin?
That's a track from the brand new album by Jill Sobule called Nostalgia Kills. Jill been making music since back in 1990. She's got a brand new album out, getting great reviews, and Carrie had a chance to catch up with her and talk about the album, which is being released officially today.
I've been a fan of yours for years, and this album just has some wonderful songs on it, starting right out of the gate with a song that just had a glowing write-up in Billboard earlier this week, I Don't Want to Wake Up. For those that may not have seen the article, can you talk about the genesis of that song?
Oh my gosh. Well, where do I begin with this one? First of all, I want to say that I don't believe at all that you have to suffer for your art or you have to be in a bad place to write a good song. Not at all. That saying, it was just after a really bad breakdown. And I have to say, sometimes it gets those juices flowing. And I was in the, staying with the, a friend's couch, and it was a, not the best time. And a friend, at the same time, I was reading the historical Jesus, History of God, Karen Armstrong's. So I had all this kind of Old Testament stories and allegories going around in my head. That mixed in with a friend said, why don't I give you a little bit of my chocolate with mushrooms in it? So there was the beginning of that song.
Well,
the first time and the last time that I ever wrote a song under any kind of influence. And you know what? It wasn't bad.
No, the results of the Old Testament and mushroom-dosed brownies came up with a really, really great song.
I know. Now what do I do? Well, the last time I had done mushrooms was in junior high school, going to see Alice Cooper's Billion Dollar Baby show live in Denver.
Yeah, I don't imagine the results were quite as productive for that time as they were for this one.
It wasn't productive, but it was the most amazing show I ever saw in my life. Also, back then, you're like, smoke machines. How do they do that?
There's a great video that pairs up with I Don't Want to Wake Up that used footage from... I was reading in the article, an old anti-drug movie. So how did the idea to use that footage on this song come about?
Well, I go in the rabbit hole I can spend hours Googling one thing and then 5 hours later, and somehow I was on silent images of dreams in silent movies, which there was some of that, and then anti-drug movies from the 60s, and there was this crazy, whacked, strange, animated, half-animated, half-real Alice in Wonderland anti-drug clip or movie, and it was one of those that I'm not sure if you saw it back then, you'd be like, you know what, I want to do these drugs, or else it would have scared you to pieces. It was probably a combination between the two, so my friend Joshua does these amazing videos of found footage, and we had to find out if these were public domain, and they were. So he took them and created this wonderful, beautiful, strange video that seems to somehow be the right soundtrack.
Yeah, the video fits the music as well as anything is that I've seen in a long, long time. It was another song on the album that really caught my attention was I Put My Headphones On. I think that experience of those big headphones that covered your, just completely covered your ears and blocked out everything around you is an experience that a lot of kids of the 70s and 80s are going to really attach to. I clearly remember doing just that, just sitting and having the headphones on and sort of blocking out the world.
And there's something more special than earbuds, those big cans that would cover half your face. It was it felt like you were more lost in it. There was something like you had a beautiful big machine on your head and that would transform you. That song was really thinking about as a kid in that same junior high school period of first of all, I was really glad that I had a brother that was 6 years older than me that had really good taste in music. So I was really into my brother's music as opposed to maybe the teen bopper stuff that my friends were listening to. And I was an odd kid who didn't have that many friends, and I wanted to go home and just listen to my music, or I wanted to watch the Watergate trial. Those were the two things. But yeah, it's kind of the song is both a kind of vision and narrative of what it was like to be kind of feeling like an outcast teen, at the same time a celebration of music that I listened to and how that basically helped and saved me.
It's funny, my brother was 7 years older than I am, so I had that same part of it too, where I sort of skipped the music that all my friends was listening to a large extent, and was pulling out his 8 tracks and popping those into the stereo with the headphones, and that's the music I was listening to.
Yeah, we had the cooler stuff.
Now, another song that's been getting a good amount of attention early on is Island of Lost Things. It was a pick of the week selection with Rolling Stone earlier this summer. That's again, and I keep saying it, and I seem to be repeating myself, but another just amazing song on this album for you.
Oh, that might be one of my favorite lyrics on the record. And it began, again, it was one of the later songs. I wrote it, I think, a week into recording. And at first, I started writing a list of things. I'm very forgetful, and when I'm stressed, you know, every hotel has an item of mine somewhere. And I'm always, you know, I asked my mother, do you think I've got early like really early Alzheimer's or a tumor in my head? I keep losing my phone. And she's like, honey, you've been that way since you were out of my womb. You know? but I was making a list of all the things that I lost and all the things that are missing, and thinking about this, you know, this strange island or place where our, you know, the missing sock is, the missing keys. And then it started changing and evolving into things that I've lost, people I've lost in my lives, situations, towns I've lost. And it started getting confidence I've lost. And it became a whole other beast.
Your songs do that. There's the meaning that it starts with, the meaning that's sort of the superficial meaning, but so much more gets woven into it as the song progresses. It, definitely on this album, but in your music in general, that seems to be the way that your songs develop, and that's part of the appeal of your music.
Yeah, I mean, I try to think of myself as a storyteller. I was doing a songwriting workshop, and I'm sure it was different than other writers where they talk about the, you know, verse versus chorus, when to put in a bridge, and I think usually, not always, but I like to write from the very first word. I don't have a chorus. I'm just writing a story, and I like it to have kind of a beginning, a middle, and an end, and sometimes there's a little twist in there. So, and I think maybe on those headphones, some of my brother's albums were influences, some of the artists in that style of writing.
We're talking with singer-songwriter Jill Sobule here on Downtown, and the album Nostalgia Kills released on Friday. People think of a nemesis as being a bad thing. In your case, having one led to a pretty good song. This, The song Almost Great, spurred on by a run-in you had with someone in at an industry, and I'm assuming now that's a music and not steel industry event.
You know it. Oh, yeah, it was at a party, and it was kind of a music industry. It was kind of a hipster thing in L.A., and I remember there were these three dudes talking, and one was saying, yeah, you know what? It's true that, like, people over 40 can't really write. They can't write pertinent songs anymore in music, and maybe, you know, it's a young people's game. And I remember going home and saying, you're an idiot, and walking off. And he didn't know who I was. But that guy, ever since, has been my nemesis. I don't remember what he looks like. I don't know. But he is my nemesis. And I love having, everyone should have a nemesis that really doesn't matter, or they don't know. And the nemesis doesn't know that they're the nemesis. But that guy is my nemesis, and he kind of spurned on that song and gave me a little oomph of, like, I'll show you.
Now, most of the album is original stuff you wrote. You did include a couple of covers as bonus tracks, and one is a beautifully stripped-down version of the 70s Ooh Child. You also have a great cover of Warren Zevon's Don't Let Us Get Sick. Now, you toured with Zevon a few times over the years. The fan recorded duets of you and Warren doing Going Down to Jackson and I Kissed a Girl, by the way, are two of my favorite tracks on my phone's playlist. They work so well, even though they're not great recordings. They're just the enthusiasm and the joy of the songs. Your time spent touring with Warren, did that have an influence on your music and or the way you wrote or anything like that?
Oh, yes, I think it pushed me to become a better writer, better lyricist. Like, he was one of those writers that, a literary writer, he was one of those that I wanted to write like that. He was one of my lyrical heroes. So to be open up for him and to have him, to know that he's listening to you, it's like, you better be on your game. You've got to be on your game. And he was so, you know, there's a lot of things about Warren, you know, I mean, he was a bad boy. But with me, he was so kind and so generous and funny. And we had an unexpected, beautiful, beautiful relationship. And I miss him really so much. And here's one thing, too, that I think about him is, oh, for my friggin' nemesis is, oh, yeah, that they're, you know, people like their earlier albums were so much better, and then they got lazier as they got older. His lyrics, to me, got even better. Like, hit those last two records, slay me. So, there. It makes you feel like you can't get lazy. You still got to push.
I've always thought that being a fan of Zevon's stuff and then your stuff, there is that storytelling aspect of both of you have in your music. Just the imagery of the words, or the imagery created by the words, is so vibrant. And that's what makes your stuff on this new album so appealing.
Thank you so much.
Moving away from the songs a little bit, this is a crowdsourced album. I feel like I should do the disclaimer that all the news people have to do when they're talking about a book that their company is part of. I was part of the Kickstarter and have
yay.
You had some other people that were pretty well, let's say a bit more well known than I did. Fred Savage of the Wonder Years. Tom Bergeron was part of the crowdsourcing for this. I love this one. Your cousin Neil, who used to be your babysitter and also happened to be the creator of Law and Order of SVU.
Yes, when he created it, and he was there for many years, and then the last 4 or 5 years he left and has done other things. But I remember going up. I get to go up and hang out with Ice-T and take pictures of myself on the slab where all the corpses were.
And then the top donor, the one that got the title.
It's a joke. It's a total joke.
Joss Whedon. Well,
as Joss Whedon is my personal Lord and Savior. And at the top tier of what you could donate was for a certain amount of money. And I thought it was a complete, you know, it was a complete joke. Who's going to do it? I will put on my record and say that you are my personal Lord and Savior. So Joss Whedon is my personal Lord and Savior.
Well,
the creator of Buffy. There you go.
That's hilarious. Now, this album, it feels like an album and not just a collection of songs. Like, you know, some music today, I think it's a part of the digital, you know, many albums just feel like a bunch of individual songs. Was that something that thematic part of it, was that something that you had in mind going in as you were developing this?
Well, you know, I have to give credit to Ben Lee, who was the producer. I gave him, like, so many songs, and he was overwhelmed, and I go, what songs do you want to make for this record? And he picked a kind of more contemplative, I won't say darker, but not as topical or goofy, and he picked these songs that had that did feel like a book of short stories. It doesn't feel like a bunch of songs or singles. It feels like there is a thematic sequence to it. And I have to give it to Ben for doing that, actually.
For me, a lot of the album felt like, you know, endings being a way to lead to change or to lead to new things.
I mean, the title track in Nostalgia Kills really is, I mean, the album, you were saying, Headphones, Looking Back, and some of these songs are on this, I'm doing theatrical piece, a one-woman show called Hashtag F Word Seventh Grade. I'm not sure what I can say on your show, but it's a look back, but it's also a warning that, you know, let's look at it and watch it today, but let's put it away and move on, because, you know, the nostalgia kills, you know, we have to keep moving or die. That's the chorus of that.
Yeah, it's, I feel like I could talk about Nostalgia Kills with you all day, but you don't have the time for it, and we're probably going to run out of time as well. I do want to touch on a couple of your other projects. Now, on this album, you don't really reach into politics at all, but you have been known to. Your company is called Pinko Records. In 2016, you spearheaded a collaborative album of protest songs called Monster Protest Jams, and that was a great album. What was that experience like of gathering songs created for a cause from so many talented songwriters and singers and musicians?
Oh, yeah. And I think because in the last years, and this was before, I started doing this 2 years before the election. So I'm also friends with a lot of artists and songwriters who are activists, from Wayne Kramer, who has Jail Guitar Doors. I've played many of the prisons that he goes to, from Boots Riley to Steve Earle. So there's a community of old-timey act, like in the old days, the Woody Guthries.
Yeah.
There's an activist community. So it was easy to get all those people together because I knew them. And it's interesting that this, before this record, and I had other ones, and Ben didn't chose the political ones. And I thought, this record, I had to do this record, because the last couple of years I'd been really involved writing topical and political songs. Mm. And we'll continue. I think this had to be a personal record.
Now, outside of the albums and stuff, you're do a lot of work, stage stuff. You've had a musical, Prozac and the Platypus, you did soundtrack work on the TV show Unfabulous. Working on a new staging of Yentl, going back to the original book as the source material. you're working, have worked on a musical called Times Square, looking at New York City in the 70s, The Jill and Julia Show, a collaboration with Julia Sweeney. And you mentioned earlier the current stage project you're working on, the one-woman show, F7th Grade. Since your music has such a strong storytelling component to it, do these types of projects feel like a natural extension of what you do with your music, or is it something different?
Oh, yeah, exactly, and it's a really good time for it, too. It's now the theater world, is in the last years, is more open to non-traditional musical theater music. Mm. So you don't have to have jazz hands going on in all your music. So it seems like being a storyteller, it feels like a natural place to go. Plus, I can procrastinate. And when you're doing a project, I mean, I procrastinated doing this record for years, but when you're in collaboration in the theater, you have someone that says, hey, we need a song for this scene, you know, and we need it tomorrow. And I like that.
Yeah, the deadlines help force it along a little bit.
I like deadlines, yeah.
Now, before we finish up, I do have to mention what I find to be one of the funniest songs in your repertoire. It's something I think you did it. It was just an in-studio appearance. It's called Slutty Halloween, which it contains the hilarious line for me, and a skimpy black dress is not very scary unless you're Ann Coulter.
Oh, yeah. That was an aside, but the idea of the song was, you know what? I love Halloween, and I hate that women, and it's not a prudish thing. I hate when it's just like the quote-unquote slutty costumes, unless it's really well done. Like if you're, you've got a really amazing vampire outfit. It's a sexy vampire outfit. It's not just like a little miniskirt and you put horns on. No.
Right,
that's
yeah.
Not right.
Yeah, there's
so
just...
So that one, did. Yeah, I had to put in the Ann Coulter thing. So, you know, just wearing, you know, horns and a skinny black dress isn't good unless, you know, you're pretending, you know, the scariest vampirous veteran of them all, Ann Coulter, who said some pretty ridiculous things in the last 2 days, actually.
Yeah, it's a lack of imagination. You know, that's the problem, is that, you know, you just got to put a little more effort.
And I like scary costumes. Come on.
But any more songs for musically neglected holidays in the works? Or,
you know, well, you know, I have written, and Harry Shearer, you know, from Spinal Tap, is every, he does these Christmas shows every year for the last 15 years, and he always includes my holiday classic, Jesus with a Dreidel Spinner.
Yes. Yep. I've tried to encourage people here to play it, but I haven't got anybody to play it on the air yet. I will say,
I will say
our sister station, the classic rock station down the hall, does a bunch of holiday songs, and your version of Merry Christmas from the Family gets a lot of airplay and a lot of listen requests every single.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah, that gets a lot of airplay in December on WKIT. So,
fantastic.
Thanks so much for taking the time. I know you've got a busy weekend with shows in support of the album release. You were in Woodstock, New York last night. Tonight, you're at the Parlor Room in Northampton, Mass. Saturday at the Guitar Bar in Hoboken, New Jersey. And the 16th at my father's place, Roslyn, New York. So thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you so much, and what a nice conversation. And it's always a pleasure when you have interviews with people that it doesn't feel like interviews, it feels like a conversation, and they know their stuff. So thank you.
Well, thank you again, Jill. Nostalgia Kills, available for download on Amazon, iTunes, Spotify, or you can order it on CD or vinyl, and other items like the great Nostalgia Kills t-shirt, directly from the online shop at jillsobule.com.